Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ted Vavam and Aleph. The Gemara is still in search of what the Bnei Yeshiva said, that Rav's statement on the Mishnah, that if he's shochet b'Shabbat, that it's asur liyoma, that was within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, and the Gemara is searching for which Rabbi Yehuda gives him that din. So we've gone through a number of Mishnayot and Braitot in which Rabbi Yehuda appeared. So far the Gemara has rejected each of those, because of a differentiation between the cases that are brought in the Mishnah of the Braita versus our Mishnah over here. Here the Gemara finally comes to the source for Rabbi Yehuda's position, which is a Braita that's found in a number of places. It's also somewhat a Mishnah in Truma, because there it only brings a portion of what we're going to say here. It doesn't bring the full machloket, and that's why it's a Braita. The Elam Ravashi, Rabbi Yehuda, Dimivashelhi. So Rabbi Yehuda, with regards to Bishul b'Shabbat, and it should read Detanya, because we have a Braita. Hamivashel b'Shabbat b'Shogeg, someone who cooks on Shabbat unintentionally, Yochal, he can eat it. Obviously, others can eat it, but he himself can eat it according to Rabbi Meir. Because according to Rabbi Meir, there's no Isur that took place. When you do it b'Shogeg, we don't view that as being an Isur, a violation of an Isur. And so therefore, you and anyone else can get benefit from that which you did unintentionally. B'mezid, on the other hand, if it's done intentionally, lo yochal, you may not eat it, divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, there are a couple of things to note over here. Rashi says when it says lo yochal, it means not only that you can't eat it, but others also can't eat it on Shabbat. That's number one. Rashi says despite the fact that it says lo yochal, which would imply only he can't eat it, not others. But Rashi says that's just not the case. The time of Mishum, delo nimte hanam yisurahu, because the whole idea is that people should not get benefit from Melechet Shabbat. And since they shouldn't get hana from Melechet Shabbat, that would apply to him, but equally to others as well. And therefore Rashi says it's hu adin la'acherim, and then the second thing Rashi adds, which is not muskam l'chol rishonim, is that it has to be b'gedei shi'asu. Gedei shi'asu is a concept by Amir la'akum, or cases where an akum does melacha for a Jew, we say that you have to wait on Motzei Shabbat, gedei shi'asu. The amount of time it would take for him to do it himself, the Jew, on Motzei Shabbat, in order that no hana comes to you from the fact that the goy did the melacha on Shabbat. If it was advantageous for you to have the goy do the melacha on Shabbat, then we wouldn't dissuade you from engaging in that behavior. First of all, if you could get hana from it immediately, of course it'd be to your benefit to ask the goy to do it, or to have the goy do it, or if the goy did it. Similarly, if you're able to benefit from it immediately after Shabbat, that's also an advantage, because if you did it yourself, it would take time after Shabbat to do it. So Chazal, in order to prevent people from engaging a goy in melacha, or having a goy do melacha for a Jew, said that you cannot get benefit from the melechet agoy until kedei shi'asu, the amount of time it would take to accomplish the same thing after Shabbat. Rashi says the same thing applies here, and that when it says you may not eat it on Shabbat, according to Rabbi Meir, that means b'kedei shi'asu. It means you have to wait till after Shabbat, and the amount of time after Shabbat it would have taken to do this melacha. Then you can get hana from it, both you and others can get hana from it according to Rabbi Meir. The case of Mezid, there is an Isur. There was something that was done that was intentionally done inappropriately. So therefore we say don't get benefit from that Isur of Shabbat. And that means don't use it on Shabbat, but also b'kedei shi'asu, the amount of time after Shabbat it would take to simulate the melacha that you did on Shabbat itself. That's Rashi's view, because he focuses on lo nimtei hana, the isura. You can't get hana from the isur. Another way to take away or to mitigate all the possible hana from this isur is to prevent you from getting benefit from it until the point at which you could have done it yourself after Shabbat. In that way, it would have been just as good for you to do it after Shabbat as it was for you to do it on Shabbat. There is a view that's brought by the Ramban and others in the school of the Ramban that suggests that Kedei Shi'asu does not apply over here. The difference being that the Kedei Shi'asu is used as a preventative measure with Amir La'akum, with things there people think or see the Isur as being a Isur Kal, a light Isur, and therefore they're apt to abuse it, and to utilize it because it benefits them. Their chazal went out of their way to prevent you from getting any hana from it, so that it makes it equal to you between using the goy and doing it yourself, and therefore there's no benefit in you violating the Isur of Amir Lakum. Over here where we're dealing with a Jew violating Shabbat, over there we don't need to put in Kadesh Yasu to mitigate their wants or desire to do Malacha on Shabbat. We assume that most people don't want to do Malacha on Shabbat, and that when they do it on Shabbat, that's an outlier, not the norm. And so you don't have to put in Kadesh Yasu to prevent people from doing Malacha on Shabbat, because in general, they'll be reticent to do that Malacha, irrespective of whether you put in Kadesh Yasu, and therefore they believe that you may not have to wait for Kadesh Yasu in this case. So that is a differentiated view that the Ramban brings from some of the Geonim, that maybe Kadesh Yasu is not necessary over here. We will continue to learn this like Rashi does, which is that it does require Kadesh Yasu. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bishogeg Yochal B'Motzei Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda says that if you do it unintentionally, you can eat it on Motzei Shabbat. And here Rashi again says, V'hu Adin Acherim. That this is true of Acherim as well. If you do it unintentionally, what's clear here from Rabbi Yehuda is that he is not like Rabbi Meir in the sense that he believes Shogeg does involve an Isur. Rabbi Meir says there's no Isur, says you can get Anah right away on Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, there was an Isur, even though it was unintentional, but that Isur, we have to prevent you from getting Hanah because you did a violation of Shabbat. And how do we do that? We ask you not to eat it until after Shabbat, B'kadei Shiasu, in order to eliminate any Hanah. That's true of yourself. That's true of others as well. Rashi does bring an alternate view that the Yochal by Rabbi Meir in Mezid is only him, not others. And in Shogeg for Rabbi Yehuda, it's also only him and not others. And he rejects that because our Gemara here parallels the din of Shabbat to Yom HaKippurim. And by Yom HaKippurim, where there's no distinction between parties, so to the din over here by Shabbat, there'll be no distinction between the parties. B'mezid lo yochal olamit. On the other hand, when it comes to mezid, he may not eat it forever. That means the person who did it, did the malacha intentionally, he is penalized to the point where he may not get hana from it, no matter what. Others can get hana from it, b'kadei shiyasu, in the amount of time it will take for you to do it after Shabbat. Tosafot really lays out the principle, which is that the shogeg of Rabbi Yehuda is equal to the mezid of Rabbi Meir. And we're going to see in a second, there's a third opinion, Rabbi Yochanan Asandar, and Rabbi Yochanan Asandar's shogeg is equal to the mezid of Rabbi Yehuda. And in that way you know, Rabbi Yochanan Asandar Omer, the shogeg yeachel le-motzei Shabbat le-acherim, others can eat it on Motzei Shabbat, Rashi would say b'kadei shiasu, the others would say immediately, v'lo-lo, but not for him, he is restricted olamit. That sheds light on Rabbi Yehuda's position that when it says lo yochal olamit, it means that you may not eat it yourself forever, but others can eat it b'kadei shiasu. B'meizid, according to Rabbi Yochanan Asandar, lo yachel olamit, lo-lo, v'lo la'acherim. You can't eat it, and nor can anyone else eat it. That Isur that was violated intentionally on Shabbat generates a inherent Isur in the product that it now becomes Divrei Isur. It's not simply that you did a malacha, your doing of the malacha imbues whatever you did with Isur in it. And therefore, it doesn't matter whether it's you or others, they cannot benefit, you cannot utilize this item. As the Gemara Baba Kama says, that the Pasuk says, Shmartem et HaShabbat ki kodesh hi lachem, ma kodesh asur b'achila, af maseh Shabbat asurim b'achila. Just like kodesh is asur b'achila, so too, something that's a result of malacha or an Isur Shabbat is also restricted in achila. Yechol afilu b'shogeg, you would think maybe that has application by shogeg as well. Tamalomer mechalaleh mochumat. B'mezid, it has application, not b'shogeg. And therefore, that's the din of Rabbi Yochanan Asandar b'mezid, that it's a surah olamit for everyone. And by the case of shogeg, he goes there, shogeg, atu mezid, for the individual himself. Whereas for the others, just a problem of getting benefit, hana'ah, from Isur Shabbat, and therefore you only have to wait, kadesh yasu, for others besides the person who did the violation. So now, in the structure again, you have Rabbi Meir starts out with shogeg, that's not Isur, mezid, that is Isur, That generates, in the case of Mezid, a necessity to wait after Shabbat, not only for himself, but for others as well. Then Rabbi Yehuda believes that there is a Maisa Isur by Shogeg, and therefore his Shogeg looks like Rabbi Meir's Mezid. And therefore, by Shogeg, both you and others have to wait after Shabbat, according to Rashi, also B'Kadei Shiasu. But the Mezid, there we penalize the individual, and we say that because he was the one who violated the Isur, he's Asur Lolamit. Others can get benefit from it after Shabbat. Just to note, the Rashi explains that even though it says in the Mishnah, Yochal and Lo Yochal, which seems to imply that it's only referring to the individual himself, not to Acherim, what he says is because in the Reisha here, Rabbi Meir has to say Yochal, because that's a Chiddush to teach you that the person who violated it could eat it right away. So then in the Seifa, he also says Lo Yochal. So that Lo Yochal, even though it applies to him and to others, it uses Lo Yochal because of the Yochal of the Reisha. And similarly, within Rabbi Yehuda's position, even though in the Reisha it says, Be'eshogeg Lo Yochal, that you may not eat it, it sounds like he can't eat it, but others could. It's not true. The Acherim also can't eat it. But the reason he needs that is because by Mezid, when it says there, Lo Yochal Olamit, that only applies to him and not to others. And so, Atu, the case of Mezid, he uses Lo Yochal in the Reisha by Shogeg as well. Even though it could have been Lo Yachal, that would apply to everyone. So, both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, again, Rabbi Meir in the case of Mezid, and Rabbi Yehuda in the case of Shogeg, they say Lo Yochal, even though it's really Lo Yachal, because it applies to him and to others as well. The reason that they did it in those cases for Rabbi Meir it is because Otto he needed to use Yochal by Shogeg, he used Lo Yochal by Mezid. And for Rabbi Yehuda, because he needs to use Lo Yochal Olamit in the Mezid case, by Shogeg he also used Lo Yochal. But nevertheless, it does apply to Acherim. That's a point that Rashi makes as to why that Lashon is used, even though it doesn't seem to include the Acherim. Rashi says over here that Rabbi Yehuda's position by Shogeg is not a Knas Shogeg Atu Mezid. We're going to see that in Rabbi Yochanan HaSanlar, there is such a view that the Shogeg is Atu Mezid, but he says by Rabbi Yehuda, you can't say that, because if it was Shogeg Atu Mezid, then the din of Shogeg should have been similar to the din of Mezid. The fact that he has a different din by Shogeg than he has by Mezid shows you that the Shogeg is not Atu Mezid. And therefore the Shogeg is Asur, not because of a Knas, but because of the fact that you violated an Isur. And that's why you are then permitted to eat it at night. That also reflects on the fact that Rashi says in the Shogeg of Rabbi Yehuda, we say that whatever we said about him, that he can't eat it, also applies to Acherim, and there's no distinction between them. So the fact that there is no distinction between him and Acherim, and the fact that his penalty by Shogeg is different than that of Mezid, Rashi says points to the fact that this is not Shogeg Atu Mezid, but rather simply the rule of Shogeg that you violated an Isur and you can't get a Na from that Isur. So that's the way Rashi learns Rabbi Yehuda's position with regards to Shogeg. The Gemarot and other places seem to indicate that it is a penalty of Shogeg Atu Mezid, and then that would make it a Machloket HaSugyot, although the Balei Tosafot are willing to entertain here that it also would be a penalty of Shogeg Atu Mezid, despite the fact that the Shogeg has a different din than the Mezid. You don't always have to say that the penalty has to be exactly like the requirements would have been had it been done by Mezid. Shogeg Atu Mezid means that we penalize you by Shogeg, doesn't mean we penalize you to the full extent that had you done it by Mezid, we just want to penalize you because you did it by Shogeg to prevent you from doing it b'mezid, or to remind you not to do it b'mezid. So now this braita is the source for Rav's position. In the case of our Mishnah, Rav said, Ashochef Shabbat, the Mishnah says, then the shchitato is k'shera. Rav says you still have to wait out the day before you can get benefit from it. That is Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Yehuda's position is that somebody who does bishol b'shabbat bishogeg, he has to wait b'kdei shiyasu, after Shabbat, he has to wait out the day, him and others. And similarly in our Mishnah, you'd have to wait. We already established that the Mishnah is speaking about a case of Shogeg, not a case of Mezid. And in that instance, you'd have to wait until after Shabbat in order to get benefit from it. And that's the source for Rav's statement about the Mishnah within the position of Rabbi Yehuda. It says, V'nukma b'mezid v'Rabbi Meir. We just said before that Rabbi Meir's position b'mezid is identical to Rabbi Yehuda's position b'shogeg. So if you can explain the Mishnah as Rabbi Yehuda b'shogeg, you can also explain it as Rabbi Meir b'mezid. It says, Lo saka datcha, tiktani dumya d'yom ha-kippurim. Because our Mishnah parallels Shabbat to Yom Kippur. My Yom Kippurim lo shna b'shogeg v'lo shna b'mezid lo achil. By Yom Kippur, it's irrelevant whether the shechita was done b'shogeg unintentionally or b'mezid intentionally. You can't eat it that day. That's because it's Yom HaKippurim. So, but that parallel to Shabbat teaches you avhocha nami. So too by Shabbat, lo shna b'shogeg, lo shna b'mezid lo achil. You may not eat it for that day. That was the source for Rav's position that you can't eat it for the day on Shabbat because of the paralleling to Yom Kippur, which was unnecessary. To mention Yom Kippur in the Mishnah was unnecessary because it would have been a derivative of whatever you said by Shabbat. If Shechitatos Kshira b'Shabbat, which is more chamur, certainly it would be the case by Yom HaKippurim. So mention of Yom HaKippurim must be adding something, and that's what Rav says. It's adding the fact that you can't eat it that day. By Yom Kippur, that's obvious because it's Yom Kippur. But by Shabbat, the paralleling of Shabbat to Yom Kippur teaches you may not eat it that day. And now that parallel also extends to tell you that that's true both b'shogeg and b'mezid. According to Rabbi Meir, it would have only been true by mezid. It would not have been true by shogeg. For Rabbi Yehuda, it's true by shogeg. It's also true by mezid, but by mezid, not only can't you eat it that day, but he himself can't eat it olamit afterward. Umi masi mukla b'shogeg. V'Rabbi Yehuda, can you really establish it like Rabbi Yehuda as a shogeg? V'ha, doesn't the Mishnah conclude, af al pi shemitchayev b'nafsho, Tani? It says that he's now subject to a death penalty. Despite that, his shechita is good. Well, if you did a b'shogeg, you're not subject to any death penalty. Hachi kamar, this is the way you need to read the Mishnah. Af al pi d'beizid mitchayev b'nafsho. So, even though when you do it intentionally, you would have been killed, you would have been subject to a death penalty. Here, because it was done unintentionally, his shechita is kshera. Gemara says, "V'nukma k'Rabbi Yochanan Hasanvar." Why don't you set it up like Rabbi Yochanan Hasanvar? Damar loshna b'shogeg, v'loshna b'mezid lo achil. Because he does have an opinion that says both by shogeg and by mezid, you can't eat it that day. Truth is, by mezid, you can't eat it forever. By shogeg, you can't eat it that day. The individual himself can't eat it forever, but you've covered at least that day. Yochanan Sanlar could have been the author. Where it says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Sanlar, kamaflig b'motzei Shabbat acherim velo lo. Rabbi Yochanan and Sanlar makes a distinction on motzei Shabbat between others and the individual himself. Others are allowed to get benefit on Motzei Shabbat, but the individual himself can't use it or utilize it forever. Tana Dinan, our Mishnah makes no such distinction. Our Mishnah says, Shechitato k'sherach tani, lo shna lo v'lo shna l'acherim. Doesn't matter for whom. Doesn't matter if it's for the person who did the violation or for others. They have the same din that they can utilize the shechita. The only way you can utilize the shechita is that at some point it becomes mutar to you. So for Rabbi Yehuda, b'shogeg, both you and others are able to benefit from that melacha after Shabbat. So then shechitato kshira makes sense, where there's no differentiation. According to Rabbi Yochanan Sanlar, b'shogeg, you aren't allowed to get hana from it forever. Others can get motzei Shabbat. So you can't say shechitato kshira, well, that's just for others. But for him, that's not true, because that distinction doesn't exist in our Mishnah. And that's why the Bnei Yeshiva said that Rav's statement about the Mishnah gave attribution to the Mishnah in Rabbi Yehuda's position, and it's the Rabbi Yehuda of a Mevashel b'Shabbat b'Shogeg. Tani Tana Kamei d'Rav, there was someone saying over Breitot before Rav, and he said, a Mevashel b'Shabbat b'Shogeg Yochal, that if someone is Mevashel b'Shabbat b'Shogeg Yochal, he's able to eat it, b'Mezid lo Yochal. And if he does it intentionally, he may not eat it. That's identical to Rabbi Meir's position that we saw before in the Breita that we brought. Umashtik le Rav. And Rav silenced him. Rav, obviously, was not happy or not in agreement with what he was saying. And that's what the Gemara wants to understand here. Why did Rav silence him over here? So now, my time on Mashtik le. Why did Rav silence him? Ilema mishum desfir like Rabbi Yehuda. If it's because he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, v'tani tane k'Rabbi Meir mishum desfir like Rabbi Yehuda. Man detani Rabbi Meir mashtikle. Wait, just because you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that means that someone who's bringing up a breita is saying over a breita that follows the sheet of Rabbi Meir, you silence him? We don't have this censorship where if you believe in an opinion, we dump all other opinions and they don't exist. No, there's an opinion of Rabbi Meir, there's an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. If a breita comes up with Rabbi Meir's opinion, that's not an invalid breita, it's just a breita that has Rabbi Meir's position. You don't hold like that. You passing like Rabbi Yehuda. That's not a reason to silence someone who's reading a breita or saying over a breita that follows the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Va'od, mi savar laki Rabbi Yehuda. And besides that, who says that Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda? Va'amar Rav Chanan Barami, ki mori lo Rav the Talmidei. When Rav used to give psak halacha to his Talmidim, mori lo Rabbi Meir. He paskin like Rabbi Meir. V'chidorish bepirka, on the other hand, when he was dorish berabim to the Amei Aretz, dorish k'Rabbi Yehuda mishum Amei Aretz. There he was dorish like Rabbi Yehuda for the Amei Aretz, because he didn't want them to take Melechet Shabbat so lightly. According to Rabbi Meir, if you do something unintentionally on Shabbat, you can get benefit from it right away. If you do it b'mezid, then you can get benefit from it after Shabbat. That is a much lighter punishment. And maybe the Amei Aretz would take advantage of that and say, oh yeah, I did it unintentionally, and then they'd get benefit from on Shabbat. So he didn't want them to feel that looseness with regards to Melechet Shabbat. Therefore, for them, he paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, he thinks the Ikar Halacha is like Rabbi Meir. So now, number one, he paskins like Rabbi Meir. Number two is, what's wrong with the breita that follows Rabbi Meir? So why is he silencing someone who is mentioning a breita that has Rabbi Meir's position in it? Tosfot over here, in the end, suggests the halacha is like Rabbi Meir. And in the end, we follow that position like Rabbi Meir. And even though Rav darshan for his balabatim, he felt that they were on the aretz and they needed Rabbi Yehuda, so he was machmir for them in order to prevent them from violating Shabbat. But he doesn't think that that's the Ikar Halacha. He thinks the Ikar Halacha is like Rabbi Meir, and the Baalei Tosfot would say, that would carry forward to us, that the Halacha is like Rabbi Meir. Ela im kein, someone sees that there's a geder that needs to be put up, and then we would say Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Now he does have the backing of the fact that Rova in the Gemara and Shabbat also seems to indicate that the Halacha is like Rabbi Meir. But then the Baalei Tosfot have to reconcile with a number of places where it sounds like the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. The way the Rambam paskins is like Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore he has to reconcile those issues with our case over here, where it seems to be the halacha is like Rabbi Meir. And he says the difference might be something that the Gemara is going to come up, whether there's real hana that you're getting, only kind of a small amount of hana. So when there's real hana that you're getting, maybe we would follow Rabbi Yehuda's shita. When there's small hana that you're getting, then we would paskin like Rabbi Meir. So that's one distinction Tosfot makes. The other distinction Tosfot makes is that they only put the Bet Milta de lo Shchiach lo Gozru. In cases where it's not Shchiach, they were not Gozer. And so that way Tosfot reconciles a Shita that follows Rabbi Meir's Psak, and he believes that that is the Halacha, like Rabbi Meir. So now, B'chiteima Tana B'Pirkei Tana Kamei. If you say that the Tana was saying over the Breita when Rav's Drosha, so this is something that I guess we wouldn't be familiar with or even understand, but it seems to be that the way the drushot work in their time is that, first of all, the chacham, who's Rav, would whisper to the Amora, and then the Amora would broadcast that to the people. That's something that we've noted many times, that the Amora at the drusha, as Rav would whisper to him, and then he would repeat and say over and be matim, whatever it was, to the Amei Aretz. It's more kavod for the Rosh Yeshiva that he doesn't have to be the microphone or the broadcast, but still, it's a stutter type of shiur because of that. In addition, it seems like there were Talmidim going over, according to Rashi, their Pirkei, going over their Mishnayot. So they were reviewing halachot out loud, and they were saying over things while the shiur is going on. That's the way Rashi explains the scenario here. If you want to say that the Tana was in the shiur, was going over and saying over this breita, Ate kuliyama latana tzaite? You think people listen to those that are saying over the breitot in the first rows? Lamora tzaite. They listen to the Amora, both because the Amora is saying over what the Chacham says. Number two is the Amora is saying it over probably in Aramaic so that people understand, whereas the Tana, if it's a Tanaic work, is in Hebrew, they may not have understood it. But that means that there's a lot of distraction going on. You have in the front rows all the Tamidim reviewing their Mishnayot, their Braitot, and then you have Rav whispering to the Amora, and then eventually the Amora broadcasting what he's saying, and you have all this going on at once. Meantime, what the Gemara says is that the people listened to the Amora, so this Tana was in the front row saying this over out loud. Rav didn't need to correct him or to stop him because people don't listen to him anyway. The Rabbeinu Gershom gives a little more of a Mesudar explanation to this, which is the way I would have imagined it, is that they had the individual who was saying over the Breito to Rav, meaning that Rav was giving the Shiur, and sometimes he would need a Breito, or he would have someone there reminding him of the Halachot to bring up the Breito. And that individual says over the Breito, and Rav silenced him when he said over this Breito, because he was about to darshan that the Halachot is like Rabbi Yehuda, and this person saying to him a Breito about Rabbi Meir. So according to Rashi, they were sitting in the front row, doing it somewhat quietly, and therefore they're not going to try to listen in on what the Talmidim are saying versus listening to what the Amora is saying in a loud, broadcasted voice. Because according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, the Tana is saying it just as loud as the Amora, but just that the Tana is saying it in Hebrew, whereas the Amora is saying it in Aramaic. And so therefore, even if the Tana is saying it out loud, and the people hear him, they're not really going to understand it because it's in Hebrew. They're not really going to focus on it because it's in Hebrew. And therefore, they'll pay attention to the Amora who's saying it in Aramaic. So the Gemara says, why did you have to silence him? The people aren't listening to the individuals feeding the information to Rav, saying over the Breito than the Mishnayot to Rav. They're listening to the Amora who broadcasts what Rav says. They're interested in what the Chacham says, not what the guy who's feeding Rav the information is saying. And so therefore it's not a problem, but in that way it would be a little more misudar that this individual was saying it over in the context of Rav Shiur, but now we're still at a problem, which is we don't know why Rav silenced him. We don't have a reason why he silenced him. So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Tana Shochet. The answer to your question is that he didn't say HaMevashel B'Shabbat B'Shogeg B'Mezid Lo Yochal. Rather he said HaShochet B'Shabbat B'Shogeg Yochal. B'mezid lo yochal. So now, Tana kamei derav ashochei b'shabbat b'shogeg yochal b'mezid lo yochal. That's what he said. Amar lei. So now Rav says to this Tana, the person who's saying this over, madateich, what is your thought here? Ki Rabbi Meir? You think like Rabbi Meir, the loch is like Rabbi Meir? So now, adkan lo kashari Rabbi Meir elo b'mevashel. That's only true by mevashel b'shabbat. The Rav Meir has his opinion. The ra'ui lakus. Because that you can chew on. Rashi over here gives some background to the word lakus. He gives a number of examples of lakus. All of them involve chewing on something that is raw. Although Rashi says the word lakus simply means to eat something, shelo kedarka, not in the normal way that you would eat it. So eating things that are raw, that normally are not eaten raw, that would be an unusual way to eat it, but that's what all the examples are. You're chewing on a wheat kernel. You are eating meat that is raw. You're chewing on a raw piece of rice. Or you're chewing on a peppercorn. All these things are things that people normally would not eat them in this fashion, but you're chewing on it. So similar over here. The case where the animal is already shachut, the meat is ready to be eaten, so over there you could eat the meat raw. Now you could either eat it like carpaccio with very thin slices of it, or you could eat it like a sort of beef jerky where you're chewing on it and you're eating a bigger piece, but it's raw and then you're eating it. So that is possible. It may not be the primary way or the best way you'd want to eat it, but nevertheless, it is possible. So therefore, when you do the bishul on Shabbat, that bishul is not really bringing you a significant hana'ah because you could have eaten it without the bishul. Now, the bishul does enhance it, does make it easier, maybe even more tasty, but nevertheless, it's not absolutely necessary for you to get the hana'ah. That's why Rabbi Meir believes by Mimashel, if you do a Bishogeg unintentionally, you can eat it right away. Do it unintentionally, you have to wait till after Shabbat. Aval, Shochet, by Shechita, De'ein Ra'oi Lakus, by Shechita, without the Shechita, you can't eat this. There's nothing to do with this animal when there's no Shechita. So there, look, he would not have his opinion in that manner, meaning that there's a distinction between Bishol and Shochet. The Tana was saying it Shochet in the sheet of Rabbi Meir, and Rav says that doesn't work. Rabbi Meir said it by Mevashel, he did not say it by Shochet. And according to this explanation of Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, then you don't have to explain that it happened in the Drosha. This could have been in any circumstance where Rav was shutting him down because of the incorrectness of what he was saying. V'ha matznitin de Shochetu. wait a minute. Our Mishnah is a case, the Mishnah here in Chulin is a case of Shochet. V'am Ravuna, Dora Shchia Barav Mishmei Derav, Asura Bechila Leyoma. So we said over here that Rav said about our Mishnah that it's usher for the whole day. Benaspin Chavraya Lameimar Rabbi Yehudahi. And the Bnei Yeshiva said, Rav is saying this within the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Ha! What would be implied from that is, had it been Rabbi Meir, Shori, then it would have been Mutar. So how can you say that Rabbi Meir doesn't say this by Shochet? Sounds like from the Bnei Yeshiva who think that Rav is saying this in Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Meir doesn't agree. If Rabbi Meir doesn't agree, that means he has the same opinion by Shochet as he has by Mevashel. So how do you come up with this distinction? So my answer is, Kishori Rabbi Meir, where Rabbi Meir is Matir, Kigon Shaya Lo Chule Mi Ba'od Yom. There was someone sick in the house prior to Shabbat. So now, in a case where there is a Shogeg, and there's no Iser Shabbat, and there's no Iser Muksa anymore, because the animal was on your mind going into Shabbat. You have someone who's sick, in all likelihood will need the Basar over Shabbat. That means that even though the animal's alive, you have in mind not to be mikatzim in adat, this animal, because it is something that you would use on Shabbat. So the animal's not muksa. You didn't do an Iser because it's shogeg. Over there, we're not going to penalize you, and we're going to let you use it immediately. Because ben hashmashot, it did not attain a status of muksa. But in a case where the person was only sick on Shabbat, or the person only came to do the shechita on Shabbat, that's very different, because then coming into Shabbat, you have an Iser of Muksa as well. So even though you did it maybe bishogeg, and there's no Iser of shechita, because that was done unintentionally, you still have an Iser Muksa, because the animal was out of mind going into Shabbat. So that's why Rabbi Meir would distinguish between a case where you have a chole before Shabbat, and a chole, whether it's on Shabbat or not a chole at all, there he would have a differentiation. Our Mishnah is a case of chole. And what's clear from this distinction that Rav makes, and that he's worried about muksa, is that Rav doesn't see a distinction in muksa biyadayim versus muksa that happens me'eleha, which was a distinction that we finished off with at the end of yesterday's daf, the top of today's amud. Rav obviously does not subscribe to that distinction, because over here he's saying an animal that is alive is considered a muksa, even though you were not mekatze it biyadayim. Where it says, Yochi, my time with the Rabbi Yehuda, the Asar. If you're setting up our Mishnah as a case of a choleh, then why does Rabbi Yehuda disagree? Why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda then agree with Rabbi Meir's position? Because, number one, you have a choleh, so there's no muksa coming into Shabbat. Number two is he's still sick on Shabbat. He's sick on Shabbat, there's no Iser injecting this animal. So then why would Rabbi Yehuda believe that you can't eat it that day? You should be able to eat it because you shechted it with permission. Pikuach nefesh, you have a cholet, you're allowed to shech the animal. So why would Rabbi Yehuda say you can't eat it for the day? Kagon, shaya lo cholet, behivri. Person was sick on Erev Shabbat, but then he got better on Shabbat itself. So now, the Iser Muksa you don't have, because coming into Shabbat, he was a cholet. Since he was a cholet coming into Shabbat, you had in mind for the animal, got rid of Muksa. On the other hand, on Shabbat itself, he's now healthy, then you have no permission to shech the animal, and if you shecht it, even b'shogeg, unintentionally, there's an Iser over here. That Iser is what Rabbi Yehuda is focused on, and that's what it makes it asur to you. So therefore, for Rabbi Meir, there's no Muksa, there's no Iser, because for him, by Shogeg, there's no Iser. That's why he believes that if you had a choleh on Erev Shabbat, that everything is fine on Shabbat, b'shechita, just like by Mevashel. Rabbi Yehuda thinks that there is an Iser by Shogeg, and the person got better on Shabbat, so then you have a problem, that there may not be a problem of Muksa, but you have a problem of the Iser of Shogeg, because you don't have permission to shech because he got better. And that'll give you the differentiation between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir in this case. One thinks there's no Iser by Shogeg, one thinks there is Iser by Shogeg, and that would explain the difference of their opinions, but you've eliminated the problem of Muksa. On the other hand, if there was no choleh here, even Rabbi Meir would agree that there's a problem b'shogeg, because muksa would make it problematic. Even if you get over the problem of Iser Shabbat, that you did it b'shogeg, nevertheless you have a problem of muksa which you never took care of. For that reason, Rav silenced the Tana that was bringing the Braita down in Rabbi Meir's name by shochet, because it's not true. It's true when you have a choleh, but it's not true when you have someone who is healthy. Tosfot asks on the previous amud, then why not set up the Mishnah like Rabbi Meir in a case where there's no choleh, where his din then is identical to Rabbi Yehuda's din, rather than setting up the din here, like Rabbi Yehuda, in a case where there is a cholev ivri, which is an unusual case. The Baal Tosfot would answer that it's because of what the Gemara is going to say again, that the parallel between Shabbat and Yom HaKippurim. And just like by Yom HaKippurim, there's an Isra Achila, whether there was a cholev mibil yom, or there was no cholev mibil yom, so too, by Shabbat, the Isra should apply, whether there's a cholev mibil yom, or whether there's no cholev mibil yom. For Rabbi Yehuda, there's no distinction. For Rabbi Meir, there is a distinction. And for that reason, it can't be that Rabbi Meir is the author of our Mishnah. V'chi ha d'amar Rav Acha bar Ada amar Rav, v'amri la amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Ada amar Rav, ha-shochet le-chule b'Shabbat, asur le-bari. Someone who shechs for a chule on Shabbat, a healthy person may not partake of it. Ha-mevashel le-chule b'Shabbat, someone who cooks for a chule on Shabbat, mutar le-bari. That a person who is healthy can partake of. My taima, what's the distinction here? Hai ra'oi lakus, v'ayin ra'oi lakus. The same problem that we discussed before. Again here, the assumption is that you had a meat that was shechted already before Shabbat. You come into Shabbat, and now the choleh needs to eat it. So you have to cook it. So is it muksa? The answer is no. Because coming into Shabbat, even when it was raw meat, you could still have eaten it. Since you could have eaten it in its raw state, therefore, there's no din of muksa. So now when you do bishul on Shabbat for the choleh, which is permitted, because it's pikuach nefesh, then the bari can benefit from that cooking because the cooking was done with permission. No muksa, no problem of bishul b'shabbat. Therefore, it's mutar to eat from it because there was no violation. On the other hand, by shechita, you have a different problem. By shechita, coming into Shabbat, the animal was muksa. The choleh didn't exist yet. The choleh only came about on Shabbat itself. We didn't have a choleh before Shabbat. We don't have a choleh on Shabbat. Choleh on Shabbat gives you permission to do the shechita today. So now, the fact that he's a choleh permits him for the shechita, but also permits him for muksa. Nothing is only b'fnei pikuach nefesh. But for the bari, now you have a problem. The shechita, yes, you have permission to do. Muksa, that doesn't go away for the bari, and therefore the item remains muksa for the bari because it wasn't ro'oi for him, ben ashmashot. So therefore, yes, the Isur is not an Isur because you're doing it for a choleh, but nevertheless, you still have the muksa problem, which doesn't disappear unless you are the choleh. And that'd be the distinction, and that same distinction will explain why Rav believes that Rabbi Meir by Shochet does not think like Mivashel. That's exactly what we just explained over here. On the other hand, in a case where he was choleh before Shabbat, then Rabbi Meir would maintain his position by Shechita, just like by Bishul, because by having the choleh there before Shabbat, makes it that the muksa problem goes away. And so once you get rid of the muksa problem, then Bishul and Shochet can look identical. Tosafot over here discusses an issue of what's called muksa lechatzi Shabbat. We have a principle that whatever the status of an item is, ben ashmashot, entering into Shabbat, that is the status for the entire Shabbat. That's only true in the negative, which means that if something's muksa ben ashmashot, it remains muksa for the whole Shabbat, even if something has changed with the status of the item. On the other hand, if something is heter ben ashmashot, that doesn't mean that it will remain heter for the entire Shabbat. If something happens that changes the status of the item, it can become muksa in the middle of Shabbat. Now it happens to be it's a machloket, whether there is muksa b'chatzi Shabbat or not. So you could argue over here that this is according to the one who thinks that there is no muksa b'chatzi Shabbat. That's one possibility. Although Baalei Tosafot say that there is a different possibility, which is maybe there is muksa b'chatzi Shabbat, and despite that fact, it doesn't become muksa. I mean, even though you had a choleh coming into Shabbat, and he got healthy on Shabbat, that doesn't trigger it becoming muksa. And he says the reason being that people who are sick tend to go back to being sick. So if he was sick erev Shabbat, he got healthy on Shabbat, so no, you no longer have permission to shecht it or do the bishul for him. Nevertheless, muksa does not come back because there's a high likelihood that he becomes sick again, and people are not mekatze miadat. And therefore, muksa doesn't enter the picture. So he says, even if you believe this muksa lechatzi Shabbat, there are ways to avoid that becoming muksa because of the person's mindset vis-a-vis a choleh who got healthy, who's teetering between healthy and sick, that he probably still has his mind on this animal because he likely will go back to being sick again. Amar Rav Papa, pamim shashochet mutar. There are times where the shochet is mutar, meaning that there's no problem of muksa. There's a problem of muksa going to Rab. There are times when there's no muksa, kagon. We explain, when the chole is there ready mibojom, you eliminate the muksa problem. Mivashel asur. There are times that mivashel is asur, meaning that even though bishul, you could have eaten it in the raw state coming into Shabbat, it shouldn't be muksa. Nevertheless, there are times where it is muksa. Kigon, shikatsats lo delat. Not that you made a case where you have raw meat going into Shabbat, it's a case where he cut a gourd for the sick individual. Rashi over here claims that he cut something from the mechubar. It was attached to the vine going into Shabbat. That's why it's muksa, because it was attached to the vine going into Shabbat. And then he cooks it on Shabbat. So now you have an iser muksa that remains with the gourd, even though technically, according to Rashi, it seems like you could eat it raw. But since it was attached to the tree, you couldn't have eaten it raw because that was attached to the tree. So given that, it's muksa coming into Shabbat. Now on Shabbat, you need the delat for the sick person? Fine, pikuach nefesh. Cut from the mechubar, do the bishul, but you can't get rid of the muksa problem. So for the choleh, it's fine. He's pikuach nefesh. Muksa doesn't exist. For the bari, that is a problem of muksa because you can't get rid of the muksa. So even by bishul, you can have cases of muksa. That's Rashi's view. Rashi says, v'eat dimifarshe v'delat tlusha. Some people explain it with a gourd that was already detached before Shabbat. Umuksa didam yishum dekashahi. And the reason it's muksa is because it's hard. And it's inedible until you cook it. Velohi. He says, number one, that's not true because delat rakahi yotermina basar. It's a lot easier to eat raw gourds than it is to eat raw meat. So he says that for sure is considered to be raka. Va'od, katsats. The verb katsats is used when you cut from something that's attached to the ground. If you want to cut something that's detached, you use the word chituch, not katsats. So he says both the language and the situation indicate to me that you're cutting from something that's mechubar and not something that's detached. This actually relates to a machloket between Rashi and Tosafot and the Gemara and Shabbat. In the end there, we actually mentioned the Mishnah from there yesterday about mechatchin duluin. And you cut up diluin, you cut up gourds to put before the behemah. Rashi claims that the problem there and why Rabbi Huda restricts it is because of tircha v'lo tzorech, tircha yateira on Shabbat. And that is because the gourd is edible in its state. When you're cutting it up for the animals, you're just making it more edible, easier for the animals to eat. But that's clear that Rashi believes in the raw state, it would have been edible for the animals. It's only that cutting it up causes it to be better, but that's a tircha v'lo tzorech. It's a tircha that's not necessary to make it edible for the animals. Tosafot there says, no, the reason you're cutting up the duim is because beforehand they were inedible for the animals, now they are edible for the animals. That parallels their views over here as well. Rashi says over here, the problem with muksa is the fact that it's attached. Had it been detached, first of all, it's edible raw, and number two is, again, the lashon doesn't fit, and for that reason, just like he says in Gemara and Shabbat, something raw is edible. It may not be as edible, but it's nice, if you cut it up, it'll be easier, if you cook it, it'll be easier, but still it's edible in the raw state. Tosafot says gourds are not edible in their raw state. Therefore, in Shabbat, he says you're cutting it up to make it edible, and that's why Rabbi Huda doesn't allow you to do it, because it's not mukhan. It wasn't something that was edible coming into Shabbat, now you're cutting it up and making it edible. Similarly over here, the Tosafot brings from the Rabbeinu Tam that he thinks that it's betlusha. We're dealing with a gourd that was already detached. And then he brings proof or evidence of the fact that the word katsats is used sometimes to refer to something that's already detached. It's not overwhelming because the majority usage is in a case where it's attached, but he does bring evidence that it's used sometimes for something that is talush. That's number one. And number two is, the Tosafot L'shitato says that a delat is not edible when it's raw. That's why when you're cutting it up in the Gemara in Shabbat, it's problematic because you're making it into an edible state now. Then what's the difference there that it says mechatchim duluim and over here it says katsats duluim? So that's due to the size of the pieces. In the Gemara in Shabbat, you're going to eat it raw. So the way to make it edible when you're eating it raw is to cut it into small slices to make it edible. Over here, you're going to cook it. So you're not going to eat it raw in the slice state. You're going to cook it afterwards. There you can cut it into much larger slices. So it uses the word katsats over here because it's talking about larger cuts of the gourd. Whereas there in Shabbat it says mechatchin because it's talking about smaller cuts of the gourd. But again, Rashi and Tosafot Shita here are parallel with their Shita in the explanation of mechatchin duluin in the Gemara in Shabbat. That's a case where the mivashel would still be problematic for the bari because of the problem of muksa, According to Rashi, because it was mechubar coming into Shabbat. According to the Bayit Tosafot, because it was raw coming into Shabbat, and you don't eat raw gourds, they're not edible at that point in time. Amar Rav Dimi min Arda. So Rav Dimi says, Hilchata, the halacha is, Shochet lechole b'Shabbat, mutar levari. Person who shechs for a chole on Shabbat, it's mutar for someone who's healthy to eat from that, b'umtza, if they eat it raw. My daima, came into Yivshar, the kazai basar, below shechita. If you're going to shech for the choleh, then it's just as good as shechita for the bari. You have to do absolutely nothing more for the bari than you do for the choleh in order for this animal to be shechut. And therefore, ki kashachit adai to the choleh kashachit. When you shech for the choleh. A side benefit is of that is you now have meat that is shechuta. So if you eat it raw, no problem in this case. Now, this does not argue on Rav's position before, because Rav's position before was speaking about a case where the individual was only chole on Shabbat. Over here, as Rashi notes over here, we're speaking about a case where the person is chole before Shabbat. And since he is chole before Shabbat, you get rid of the problem of muksa, and that's why when you shecht it, it is now mutar, not only for the chole, it's also mutar for the bari. As opposed to Rav, who said it was only mutar for the chole, not for the bari, because the muksa problem. But that's because for him, the chole only happened on Shabbat. Here, the chole happened before Shabbat, and that's why there's no muksa problem. And the shechita itself, which is permissible, because you're doing it for the chole, now the bari can benefit from that, because there's no isser on Shabbat, and he can eat it raw. The question of how you eat meat raw without salting it is somewhat of a problem that the Bayit Tosafot actually dealt with on yesterday's daf, where they spoke about how do you eat it raw if you don't salt it. So it might be that you actually salted it because the choleh needs it salted, and that might be the answer to the question. Or Tosafot comes up with a big chiddush that has ramifications, which is that dam evarim, dam that is absorbed inside of an aver, has no iser min haTorah. Dam evarim is only asur when it is exuded, when it leaches out of the aver itself. So if you're to cook it, if you boil it, then the blood will leach out. That blood is going to be asur. Or blood that sits on top of it, you have to rinse it off, you have to get rid of it. You don't need to salt it in order to rid yourself of that blood, dam evarim. And that means if you eat a raw piece of meat, you can eat it without salting, because the dam that is inside doesn't have a din of dam, because it never came out. So as long as you rinse it, you can eat it. That's a huge chiddush of the Bayit Tosafot. Yeah. They then extend that chiddush to roasting as well. And this I discussed yesterday, and the Ramban has a huge piece here about roasting, which is that roasting may overcome the problem of lack of salting as well. Which is that if you roast meat, the blood, even though it moves around internally in the aver, it does not come out of the aver, or anything that does come out of the aver is evaporated away, burnt away by the fire, by the roasting over the open fire. And therefore, you, even if you didn't salt it, roasting it can overcome the problem. The same way that roasting or grilling liver gets rid of the problem of dam as well. So that's another chiddush of the Bayit Tosafot, that lack of salting can be overcome by roasting. So that was how you would solve the problem of the dam over here, and not salting it on Shabbat. Although you should know that the Rambam disagrees with Rashi's view here, that we're speaking about a case where he's chala mibaol yom, that he became choleh beforehand, and that's why there's no problem of mukseh, because the Rambam says even if he became choleh on Shabbat, there's no problem of mukseh, because we paskin like Rabbi Shimon. In the din of mukseh, that there's a distinction between mukseh biyadayim versus something that is mukseh me'eleha. And only things that are mikatseh biyadayim are problematic, not mukseh me'eleha. And for that reason, even if you didn't have the choleh before Shabbat and he became choleh on Shabbat, it's not a problem of mukseh by the behema. So that is the view of the Rambam, who paskins like Rabbi Shimon the Gabei mukseh. Therefore, it does not have what we mentioned before, that Rav, who does not differentiate in the din of mukseh, because he paskins like Rabbi Yehuda with regards to mukseh. Rashi just continues to explain the sugya according to Rav. But the halacha, Rabbi Rambam, who's paskin like Rabbi Shimon and not like Rav, says that even in a case where the choleh happened on Shabbat, if you do the shkita, there's not a problem of mukseh by that shkita for the bari. The second din that he brings is, hamavashal the choleh b'Shabbat, someone who cooks for a choleh on Shabbat, which is obviously basar that was already shchuta from yesterday. So here, you don't have a problem of muksa. So certainly, if you cook for the choleh, it should be that the bari should be able to partake of it. Nevertheless, asur lebari, zera shema yarbeh bishvilo. We don't allow you the bari to partake of it because you might increase the quantities for him. Now, marbe bishirim can come in two forms. It could be that up front you put in more than necessary. That may not be a problem, or that may not be what the gzera is here for, because in that case you haven't changed the bishul. You're doing a single action of bishul. There, marbe bishvilo may not be an issue. The problem might be when you add to the pot along the way, and then you're doing separate masima bishul. That might be the problem that we're worried about here, where you're marbe bishirim. Or there are those that suggest that even when you, up front, you put in more than necessary, that also is marbe bishiurim, and that would be a problem on Shabbat. So it's not inherently problematic. It's problematic because we know that the person's thinking, I could have a hot piece of meat here on Shabbat. I'm cooking for the choleh. Well, I'll put a little more in, and then I'll end up eating it. So that's what we don't want to do. And that gzera prevents it. So technically, it would have been mutar. There's a gzera that says, do not do it. All right, now, next Mishnah. Hashochet b'magal yad. Someone who shechs with a hand sickle, bitsur with a flint stone, ubikaneh with a reed. We discussed this already earlier in the Masechta with regards to the reed. How do you shech with the reed? Don't you need a kli sharet by kodoshim? So on and so forth. We discussed the Balei Tosfot over there, who mentioned this in a number of places, including the beginning of Ezum Mekoman and Zvachim, as to how can a kaneh be a kosher vehicle for shechita if you require kli sharet for shkita, which would mean a metallic utensil. So Tosfot gave a number of answers, one of which was, this is according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, who thinks that wooden kli sharet are good, or the possibility that the requirement for kli by shkita is not a requirement of kli sharet, it's just a requirement of kli, or kli yafeh, not kli sharet, and therefore a kaneh would be fine. That's how Tosafot deals with the issue. Shechita tok shera. If you use any of all of these, bidyavad, it is good. We'll have to see why it's only bidyavad. Hakol shochatim. Anyone can do shechita. Uleolam shochatim. And you can always do shechita. Ubechol shochatim. And you can check with any item. Chutz. The exceptions to the rule of what you can check with utensils you can use are mimagal katsir, the harvesting scythe, ve'amigera, which is a saw. And Rashi over here explains the difference between a saw and a harvest scythe, which is that a saw has teeth that are sharp in both directions, and they come to a point. On the other hand, the harvest scythe has teeth that are only sharp, only cut in one direction. It actually has teeth that turn, fold over, and therefore they only cut in one direction. They're actually sharp in the other direction and act like a knife in that direction. In the direction of the teeth, then they function more like a cutting or a saw, and things catch in there. And therefore, you might have thought, by the case of the harvest scythe, that if you went against the direction of the teeth, that would give you a smooth cut, and it would be okay. We say no, because of the behemoth, that will catch. Maybe we're afraid you have to come back the other way. And when the saw, for sure, which has teeth in both directions, there, of course, we worry about it, and that's why it's pasul, even bidyavad. Vashinayim, teeth. Teeth here mean, not with your teeth, but a jaw that was detached from an animal that had teeth on it. If you sharpen those teeth and then use it as a knife, that is problematic. Vatsiporen, and your nail. If you use your nail, it's problematic. Mipnei shein chunkim, because they choke. They don't cut. They actually have pigimot in them. They have some teeth in them. And those teeth cause it that it's not just a smooth, sharp blade. There are bumps or ups and downs in there. And that causes a cutting that is not because it's slicing through, but rather it's catching. And when it catches, it causes choking rather than shechita. Rashi explains that mipnei she'en chunkim applies to all the items in the Mishnah, with the exception of tziporin, because tziporin is a separate issue because it's mechubar. The other items are problematic because of chunkim, because they have sharpnesses and edges and pigimot in them, and that's what causes the problem. So meshum chunkim applies to everything except tziporin as to why they are psulim. Hashochet diavad in the chatchila. From the Mishnah, it makes it clear that the shochet is only b'diavad, not the chatchila. Bishlam of magal yad, I understand by the hand sickle why it is that we don't allow this. Dimat in the mevad be'idach kisa. Because you might use the other side. So Rashi explains over here that the hand sickle had two sides to it. The hand sickle had an outer blade on the curve that was a smooth blade. On the inner side, you have a blade that has teeth on it. So then, if you use the internal side with teeth, it's clearly problematic. If you use the external blade on the curve, that would be something that is permitted because it's a knife. So why do we not allow you to do it the chatchila that way? Because we're afraid. If you use the outer blade, you might come to use the inner blade, and the inner blade is problematic for shechita. Rashi then extrapolates that and says, if you have a knife that has a pegima in it, it has some sort of nick in it, that would make it pasul the shechita. But it happens to be that you have sufficient room on the knife before the pegima to do the shechita. So you can do the shechita and never touch the pegima. Rashi says you're not allowed to use such a knife. That comes out of our Gemara over here because the Gemara over here says, I'm worried about you using the outer blade when you could possibly use the inner blade. And certainly on a single blade where there is a pegima for along the blade, if you use the front part of the blade, you might come to use the back part of the blade and we won't allow it. So Rashi says, the chatkila, you cannot use such a knife, similar to what the Gemara says over here, that we worry about you using the alternate side. That's Rashi's explanation of what the situation is here. The Raivud suggests that the Magal Yad over here is more along the lines of an axe of sort, in which one side is a very sharp blade, and the other side is a much more blunt instrument, which you can use to split things or break things, but it's not as sharp. So again, the problem is if you use the sharp end, like a knife of the axe, you might come to use the back side of the axe, which is a much blunter side, which is not kosher l'shechita. El etzur v'kaneh l'chatchila lo. Why is it that by a flintstone and by a reed you can't do it l'chatchila? V'rimini, don't we have a tosefta that tells us b'chol shochatim, you're allowed to check with anything. Ben b'tzur, ben b'zuchuchit, ben b'krumit shel kaneh. You can use a flintstone, you can use glass, you can use a reed halm, you can use any of these things, and that's lichatchila b'chol shochatim. Lokasha, kan b'talush, kan b'mechubar. Easy way to explain the difference is that if it's detached, in that situation we allow to use it lichatchila. If it's attached to the ground, then b'diavad, if you used it, we allow it to be used. But on the other hand, we don't allow you to use it when it's attached lichatchila. And we're going to see why that is, that you can't use it the chatchila, because we're going to see there's a machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Chia with regards to this manner. Damar Rav Kana, ha-shochet b'mechubar l'karka, someone who checks with something that's attached to the ground, Rabbi Pusel. Rabbi says it's no good, the shkita. Rabbi Chia, machshir. Rabbi Chia is machshir. We'll learn Rabbi's reasoning in tomorrow's daf, because he learns out, vayikach et ha-machelet, that it has to be something that is detached. So it's a gzeirat ha-kaduv that it has to be detached. The suggestion now is that Rabbi Chia is only matir b'diavad. Aval l'chatchila lo. L'chatchila he wouldn't allow it. And therefore Rabbi Chia who's makshir in the Braita is also the author of the position in our Mishnah that says this is only good b'diavad. It says, b'mayu kimta k'Rabbi Chia b'diavad. So now you're explaining that Rabbi Chia is the author of our Mishnah and that's why it's diavad. Elahad etanya, what about the fact that we have this tosefta that we just mentioned, b'chol shochatim, ben betalush, ben b'mechubar, ben shasakin l'mala, tzavar behema l'mata, whether the knife is on top and the animal is below, ben shasakin l'mata, tzavar behema l'mala, or the case that the knife is below and the behema's head is above, mani, who's the author of that position? Lo Rabbi, below Rabbi Chia. It can't be Rabbi and it can't be Rabbi Chia. I Rabbi Chia diavad in the chatchila lo. If it's according to Rabbi Chia, how can you say over here b'chol shochatim ben betalush ben b'mukhubar? The lot of shach with anything attached, detached sounds like the chatchila. But you told me Rabbi Chia only says it b'diavad. I Rabbi diavad nami lo. According to Rabbi, even b'diavad it's pasul. So then, who's the author of that braita? The olam Rabbi Chia. All right, you have to change your mind now. You're right, Rabbi Chia, when he says he's machshir b'mechubar, he's machshir even the chatchila, and he'll be the author of that tosefta. How come the braita that we brought, the tosefta that says, a shochet b'mechubar l'karka, Rabbi Pusel, Rabbi Chia machshir, that's a shochet, which is b'diavad. Why are they arguing b'diavad? Rabbi Chia thinks it's even good l'chatchila. Lo diacha kocho de Rabbi. To teach you Rabbi's position, that even b'diavad, Rabbi thinks it is pasul. And even though, as the Bali Tosafot point out, In general, we say koach the hetera adif, so we should have told us about Rabbi Chiya, not about Rabbi's position to mention the chatchila. That you don't need to do here because we have an explicit braita that tells us that Rabbi Chiya's position is the chatchila, it's good. So here you don't need to tell us about Rabbi Chiya, we need to know about Rabbi's position. And therefore it's mentioned bidiavad to tell you that Rabbi thinks it's pasul, even bidiavad. Vela matnitan diktani. What about our Mishnah now? Who's the author of our Mishnah? Hashuchet diavad in the chatchila? Lo. Mani, lo Rabbi, the lo Rabbi Chiya. E Rabbi Chiya, filu lechatchila. It should have said lechatchila. Why is it saying b'diavad? E Rabbi, diavad nami lo. And if it's really not Rabbi, who thinks even b'diavad, it's pasul. When it says, lo, lam Rabbi Chiya, filu lechatchila. So the Olam Rabbi Chiya believes that mechubar is fine, even lechatchila. Umatnit in our Mishnah that says a shochet is Rabbi. Well, kasha Rabbi ad Rabbi. You just told me that Rabbi believes that even bidiyavad is pasul. Now you're telling me our Mishnah that bidiyavad it is kasher. Lo kasha, kam b'mechubar meikaro, kam b'talush ulusof chimro. Makes a difference as to how it is attached to the ground. If it's attached to the ground from the outset, meaning that it was permanently there, it was always attached to the ground, that is something that is asur even bidiyavad. On the other hand, if you detach something and then reattach it to the ground, that bidiyavad will be kasher, not the chatchila, because we're afraid if you do it this way, you also do it something that's actually attached to it. Now the truth is, you could have given this distinction within the position of Rabbi Chiya as well. You could have explained Rabbi Chiya's chatchila and bidiyavad this way. Tosafot says that doesn't make sense. Because the only reason you would say something is asur, atu, the other thing, is if you think there's a problem with the other thing. If you think there's a problem with mechubar, then it makes sense to say when talush, usob mechubar, then you're going to say atu mechubar, there's something wrong. But to say in Rabbi Chiya's position that talush, usob mechubar is totally fine, and mechubar is going to be asur, there's no reason to make it asur. There's nothing that you're worried about to make it asur. And if you say maybe it is because of the fact that maybe Shema Yidros, that you'll put pressure on it. If that's the case, then even Talosh L'Sof Fimbro, you should worry about that problem of putting pressure on it, which is why, in general, we prefer that you shaft the animal with the animal down on the ground and the knife on top, versus the case where the animal's on top and the knife is going up, because over there there's a chashash that maybe the weight of the animal would pressure on the knife and cause drisa. So that would be the possible chashash over here. Once you have that chashash by chibro, you'd have to have the same chashash by talush or the sof chibro. And therefore, this solution doesn't work within Rabbi Chiya. It only works within Rabbi. How do we know we distinguish between something that was always attached to something that was talush or the sof chibro? Titania, we have a brighter. Ashochet bimuchni. Someone who chefs with a machine. Via Rashi claims the machine is a spinning wheel. It's spinning on an axle. Whether that's a mill, whether it's some sort of machine that's driven by water, driven by an animal turning it around, whatever it is, the wheel is spinning. And Rashi claims you attach a knife to the spinning wheel. And so the knife goes around as it spins around. It goes around and around. So if you set up the animal, right when the wheel's coming around with the knife, it can check the animal over there. That's Rashi's view as to what it is. There are others who suggest that it's not that the knife is attached over there, but the wheel itself is the knife. That is a blade that is spinning around. Or it's a case where the spinning of the wheel actually causes a knife to move back and forth and perform shchita in that manner if you hold Behema's neck over it. So there, shchitato ksheira. If you do it a mukhni, b'diavad, it's okay. B'mechuber lekarka, shchitato ksheira. B'chuber lekarka, b'diavad, it's okay. Na'atz sakin bakotel. If you impale a knife into a wall, b'shachat ba, and you use it for shchita, shchita tok shira. Again, it is kasher b'diavad. And obviously, in this case, you'd have to move the behema over the knife, and not the knife or the sharp object through the behema. But the Gemara is going to tell us that that's fine, as long as it's a molich and mevi action, that's fine, whether it's done with the moving of the behema's head, or the movement of the cutting utensil. Hayat sur yotzei min hakotel. If you have a sharp flintstone coming out of the wall, o kane ole me'elav, or you have a reed that grew by itself, vishachat bo, and you shech with it, shchitato psula, then the shchita is no good at all. Kashin al dodi. What's the difference in the cases here? Why are these certain cases they are kasher b'diavad? The other ones are not kasher at all. Elalav Shmamina, there must be a distinction between Shani Ben Mechubar Meikaro, Litalush, Lusov Chibro Shmamina. There's a difference between something that was attached all along versus something that was detached and then attached. So the examples here are, for instance, a person dug out a cave for his house. And then there's a flint stone on the sidewall, which is a part of the bedrock. So that knife that's created as part of the bedrock, that's something that's chibro meikaro. That's something, if you use the shift with it, it's going to be problematic. A reed that grew by itself, it was grew from a seedling and then it grew up. That's something that's attached to the ground, meikaro. If you shift with it, it's going to be problematic. The other hand, if you took a reed and cut it down, and then you went ahead again and then implanted it in the ground to keep it steady, then that's something that was talush l'sof chibro. Or the case here with the knife. Where you took the knife and you impaled it in the wall, that also is a case where it was talush, and now it's mechubar to the wall. That distinction is what Rabbi is saying. If it's permanently attached to the ground, that's exerut ha-katuv, that is pasul. If it was talush l'sof chibro, technically it still has a status of talush. But Rabbi says, in that case, I don't want you doing the chatchila, because you might come to do it v'mechubar, really. And so therefore, I'm goes there, the chatchila, don't do it. V'divad, if you did it, it is kasher. There is a very controversial statement in Rashi over here, which obviously has implications, but she says, kaneh, omed me'elav, the case of a kaneh that grows of its own, shalo nato adam sham. It's a case where nobody planted it there, elamat smo'ala, it grew by itself. So Rashi is making a distinction here, which is unbelievable. He's saying that if you planted a seed there, that's the equivalent of talush l'sof chibro. That's not chibro mi'ikara, because human involvement, you planted the seed. And he is medayik it out of the fact that the Braita said, kane ole me'alav. It grew of its own volition. It was nobody intervened here. Tosafo disagrees with that, and you can see the Gimel on the Shittim Mekubetz, it says there were Svarim Yeshanim that did not have this line in Rashi, because it's such a difficult line. Tosafo says it makes no difference if the seed fell by itself, or if someone planted the seed. If it grows there by itself, that is something that is considered chibro mi'ikaro, because it rooted there, it grew there, nothing has changed. And therefore, it's still considered chibro mi'ikaro if you planted the seed there as well. And he says that the word ole me'alav over here, lo nakad ole me'alav, ela legalot, shesur hayotse min hakotel, da'ari bekotel ma'ara. It's saying ole me'alav here to teach you that the tsur we're speaking about here is something that's in the bedrock, that you're inside of a cave, and not something that was brought there afterwards, or a stone that was brought there afterwards, not to teach you that it's a kaneh that grew by itself with no human involvement. So Tosafot rejects what Rashi says over here, and the Sittur Mekubetz, it says that there were many versions of Rashi that didn't even have that line in it, but obviously you can see it would have major implications then if you believe that planting a seed makes it that it's not considered to be mechubar, and that would have ramifications possibly in many areas of halakha. Okay, we're going to stop here, two lines down on the top of Tetzayin Amud Aleph.